welcome to the FSF Popcast live show.
Hello, kids and cadets. Welcome to the FSF Podcast. I am Tim. I'm your host. And of course, this is the ever trustworthy Kathleen here with me today.
You didn't even gesture the right way. You pointed, but
I think my screen is mirrored in the opposite direction. So I may have pointed this way, but you may actually be that way.
Who knows where I am?
She went that away. Anyway.
About accurate. Yeah.
That's every day. What are we kidding? But yeah. Tonight's not just your average live show. We have a very special edition of the FSF Popcast tonight, because not only are we going to be talking about fun nerdy things, of course, but we also are talking about a celebration of life, and we are very excited to have some wonderful guests in the background who are going to help us do that. And one of those, it's very important because it is the 20th anniversary of her rebirth into life and her successful passing of pancreatic cancer and beating that awful disease. So we're very excited to have some really cool guests in tonight. There will be a link shared in the comments, and so you guys can go into the comments, find that. It's also in the show notes down below. Please consider donating whatever you can tonight. If you think about it in the terms of maybe having one less coffee this week, maybe in the terms of having one less cheeseburger this week or two, depending on where you go, every little bit is going to help. Every little bit is going to be important for helping donate some money to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, or PanCAN, if you will, so that they can help fight this disease. So
one less coffee this week might be one more year for somebody else. We can
absolutely
give up a coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's as much as one of our show partners would not like us to give up coffee for a little bit, I think even they would give up coffee for this.
But they also, as amazing as our show partner is, they donate to the children's cancer all the time.
This is true. This is true. So if you're wondering, yeah, it's these guys.
We do love ourselves some Monkey Cult coffee, though.
We do. All right. Well, without further ado, Kathleen, we have people in the back that we should probably be introducing.
Oh my goodness, we do. I don't even know if I can say half of these words without these names without giggling. So we're gonna try to keep our composure over here. Sorry, massive Star Trek.
In our show notes are all color coordinated by the things that each of us should be talking about or sharing or anything of things along those lines. I made sure that Kathleen had to introduce everybody. All the names are colored.
I'm so excited. Oh, goodness. All right. So we have amazing guests in the back. We have the one and only Kitty Swink, who, yes, is celebrating 20 years of beating pancreatic cancer, along with her incredibly talented husband, Mr. Armin Shimmerman.
Hi there.
Hey.
Ew.
Howdy.
Oh, we also have the wonderful John Billingsley in the background. Hello.
Hi, John.
This is the one I'm going to giggle the most about, and Tim knows I'm going to.
I've been waiting for this.
Kathleen can do this. We have the incredible Jonathan Frakes waiting for us. Riker was my first crush. Legitimately, Riker was my first crush.
So. You just made my day.
Yay! You made my day. Like, as soon as Tim pulled you on the screen earlier, and my husband texted me with the, did you freeze or did you forget how to breathe? I'm like, you know, I'll be okay. I got this. And then also in the background, I would say wonderful things about him, but I don't know him. So I get to say wonderful things about him after we get to meet him. We also have Juan Carlos Cotto waiting in the back to join us. Yeah.
You were my first crush, Juan Carlos. My
yes, very first yes.
Yes. It was just a couple of weeks ago, in fact, actually.
You know.
Now it's over, but during those...
I can genuinely say that Kitty was my first crush.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Absolutely.
Nobody crushed me like you did.
First of all, you start with a lie.
I'm like, that's how you win husband points, and then immediately plummet back down.
I'm the shortest of this girlfriend. Please, come on. Okay.
I'm over here like, he's like, she was my first crush. I'm like, oh, you are just the greatest kiss up. This is fantastic. I'm getting a pen so I can start taking notes. I'm like, oh,
he knows. Just say it. I have a lot of them.
Oh, you just say it just like that, directly, just like that. They believe you? Oh, okay.
If I say it with a straight, they believe.
That is where the acting chops have got to come in handy.
Exactly.
You got some good sun too, I see there, Armin and Jay.
Yes.
Jay,
good color. Good color.
Yes. Thanks to our friend Jonathan Frakes, we had a nice trip to the Caribbean. Thank you, John.
Excellent. My pleasure.
I could go for a trip to the Caribbean. That sounds like fun. Although we at least have frogs in our backyard again.
That's good.
That's good.
That's a plague, you know. That's one of the 10 plagues.
It is, but at least it's soothing sounding. It's better than the 20 Topo degrees.
Topo Chico. Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course it is.
All right. Well, hey, to get ourselves started here, I thought what we could do. Now, we talked about Kitty's involvement, and we know how, you know, I've talked a little bit about this with John when he was on our show. And of course, we talked with Katie and Armin about this while they were on our show. But Jonathan and Juan Carlos, if you would please, would you mind taking a moment and explaining to the audience your attachment to PanCan and why you guys are so involved?
I lost my wonderful sidekick and brother, Daniel Mark Frakes, when he was 41. He was looked dreadful. We took him to the hospital. They opened him up with the Whipple, assuming they were going to operate once they discovered what was going on. They closed him up and said he's too far along. He's going to die within the next 6 months, which he proceeded to do. He had a wife and a child, and he was the cute one in our family, if you know what I mean. So we had an apartment in New York. We lived together, and I mean, we traveled across the country together. So it was it was quite a blow. My friend Kitty and Armin, who I've known for like 40 years, 45 years, something insane. Kitty's survival has been very important to me. And I used to share with my mom because when I told my mom about Kitty, it was a very big deal for our phone calls. If we discuss, and she'd always ask how Kitty's doing. And so that connection. And then one day we were at Marina Sirti's backyard as she was about to leave to England. Kitty said, you know, I'm involved with this organization called PanCan. Would you like to participate? And all my life, I'd never had a charity that I had a connection with or a charity that I was, you know, I could believe in with all my heart and soul. I said, absolutely. And this was, 5 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
So Kitty, without being trite or coy, is our hope for the future and the reason I'm here. And I think the reason a lot of people keep coming back. And Kitty also takes care of people on PanCan. One of the greatest things about the whole organization is that they can advise you what doctor to go to if you need a second opinion. They can give you advice for physical and mental help, but they also can support you. And people like Kitty are the people that come up with that support.
And so the family surrounding the patients as well.
Patients
and
family services is incredible. Yeah.
That's how I got in.
Okay. Jason,
it's all yours.
So I lost my brother Manny last year in July to pancreatic cancer. Manny was, as many of you know, the showrunner of Star Trek Enterprise for its last two seasons. But more than that, Manny is really my inspiration. I mean, he was my older brother, and he was the smart one, right? And he got me in the Trek when I was a kid. You know, we started watching it on reruns in Channel 35 in Orlando, Florida, and I followed suit and, you know, became rabid fans. We went to early conventions in Orlando, and you know, he was my inspiration. He's the reason I'm in the business. You know, I was a PA on his Super 8 films. So, you know, I basically followed him out here, and we've been working in television for a long time. The cancer presented actually as diabetes 2 years ago. It was almost 2 years ago. And it was a sort of a sudden onset diabetes. He got very thirsty. And when they went in and checked, they realized that there was a tumor in his duct, and he battled it for a year. You know, he fought
he was very private and he kept it to himself, but he did two rounds of chemo and he did radiation. But by the time the chance for surgery came along, it had spread. So it was, you know, it was a brutal fight, but he fought it hard and he continued to just write. And he was on American Horror Stories at that point. And he continued to just write and create and inspire. You know, he left behind four young children, a little Manny who's 14, a daughter Riley who is 12, and twin 9-year-old girls who are acting up a storm in the local community plays in Pasadena and whatnot. But I was sort of personally overwhelmed by the reaction from the Trek community when he passed away. You know, I had also, I mean, I'm also a lifetime fan and sort of turned him on to Next Gen because he was a purist, right? And then back in the 90s, I said, you gotta watch this show, because he was like, no, there's only one Star Trek, right? And then, of course, he watched and fell in love. And I mean, we were all in the band and there was a trombone player in the cast. So, I mean, how could we not love the show, right? But so his love of Trek continued, but the community, the outpouring was so powerful. And then I found out about, you know, Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer and the connections. So I, you know, I reached out through the organization and met Kitty and Armin and Jonathan and John, and they were kind enough to sort of welcome me on, because I felt like I needed to do whatever I could to raise awareness and raise money. You know, one of the things we are talking about is awareness, and just that simple thing of sudden onset diabetes is one of the sort of red flags that people need to sort of watch out for. When it comes to pancreatic cancer, but that's why I'm here. I'm here because of my brother and because of Star Trek.
Okay.
I'm really glad you are, JC. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I am. Too. Thank you. I'm not thank so glad about Billingsley, but I'm really enjoying JC.
with the badge.
And they're off. Okay.
All right. Well, we also,
nothing like
we also
taking just, the Star Trek crews when they rank all the actors. I was 37th out of 36 in popularity. So. Yeah, I know. It's
that was my number on the call sheet on North and South, by the way.
37? I thought you were number one.
You were in the southern part of the call sheet.
We're deep down the call sheet.
Now, wait, we're showing berries, but we want to show us because we're in the lead.
Yes, we are.
I understand. So this is for the FSF podcast. What we're trying to help raise for Purple Stride, our goal is $2,000. Last year we were somewhere between $1,500 and $1,700.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Happy to. We got our first donations tonight. So those are where we're at right now. So we're at $96 and eight little pennies. And we are excited to have those on. And so please keep donating as you guys make donations. I'll try to catch up to that every once in a while. We're going to put that up on screen so you guys can see what kind of progress we're making tonight. And of course, you guys can continue to make those donations well past April 27th. But you can make, we would appreciate it if you get them in before April 27th. But of course, PanCan, you can go to www.pancan.org at any time and make those donations. They will be very, very happy to take them.
The Purple Stride website stays open for another month after the walk. So if you keep wanting to donate to your team and our team, you can for another month after the walk on this.
Yeah.
Since I think of myself as an educator, let me explain to people some of the things we've just said for people who aren't familiar. Why the 27th? Why Purple Stride? Purple Stride is the annual event that the PanCan organization organizes to raise money for pancreatic cancer. By the way, they have raised over the course of 20 years $207 million in funds. And that money has gone to research, has gone to support, as Johnny said earlier. It's great. And I think it was Tim, maybe it was Kathleen, said something that I want to reiterate because it was brilliant. Which is that two hamburgers may save a life. Giving up two hamburgers may save a life. But the money that you just saw on this screen may indeed go to saving a life. We, PanCan has raised the survival rate from when Kitty got it and when Daniel got it, which was about 3 or 4% survival rate. It is now at 13%. Now, 13% is not huge, but it's three times
a lot better, yeah.
As it was before. This is what the money goes to. We are educating doctors so that as Juan Carlos was saying, so that when Manny went to the doctor would be smart enough to go, you know what? These are symptoms that might be pancreatic cancer. Let's check for that. You have to educate doctors to do that. And that's what PanCAN is doing. So the 27th is the of April is the Purple Stride event. It occurs in 60 cities around the country. I did it in Kansas City a couple of years ago. It's certainly happening in Los Angeles. It's probably, for everyone who's listening, there's probably a city near you that you can participate in. It's great fun, by the way. Thousands of people having a wonderful time celebrating life. And the name of the event is called Purple Stride. Thank you for listening.
Absolutely.
And Armin, what's the name of the website?
PanCAN Action Network. The website? Our website.
Yes, the only website.
Oh, Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. I have to be prompted. Thank you. Mr. Director, can you do another take on that? Can I do a second?
The World Wide Web. It's great. It's a great thing.
Don't worry, Armin. We'll fix it. We'll fix it in post.
You were worried that we would be maudlin. You can see that maudlin is not the order of the day.
Just to be clear, in addition to supporting the team you guys are forming, if you wanted to support our team, you could go to Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, Purple Stride, find a team. We would come up first. Track Against Pancreatic Cancer, because right now we are the top team. The top team. Not that it's a competition.
Yes, there is.
Oh, there's definitely a competition.
Life is always a competition.
Yes.
Well, to be honest, that's how
the second place team is really mad because they're usually the first place team. They're really mad that they've been displaced.
The Cedars-Sinai Whipplers are not going to beat us this year.
I'm so excited.
I'm not.
Yeah, so actually, that's how we got
my avatar. Give and give often.
There you go. That's how we got involved with PanCAN. Is we actually went to PanCAN.org. I looked for Kitty's team, and our team is a subset of your team.
I know.
So everything that we donate goes directly, it applies to your guys' donation
and
funds.
What you guys are doing, if other people want to do, form a subset of our team, that's another way to do it, which is fabulous. You can join our team as...
We call them away teams.
Away team.
That was good. I'm really glad I'm not wearing a red shirt.
You wear purple shirts and not red shirts. You wear purple.
Right? Red shirts are good.
Wow.
However, I am the red shirt every year.
You know, my mom, when she, my mom passed away in 1990, and similarly to Jonathan, from diagnosis to death, a matter of months. And one of the reasons that nothing could be done for her is because she never would have entered her mind that she might have pancreatic cancer. She had some back issues and she had some stomach upset. She delayed going to the doctor. It's a cancer that acts fast and has to be caught quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's so wonderful about this organization is that in raising awareness, it's a lot of people who might not have ever thought that it was a possibility who are now asking to see whether or not if they have it in their family history, they might have some genetic markers. Maybe they can go to the doctor and say, hey, can I have some tests to just find out whether or not this is something I should be on the lookout for? Some of the survival rate now is going up because of the work this organization has done to raise awareness.
Yeah.
And to raise the awareness to doctors as well.
Yep.
And there's another $100. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
I like your style. The style is very John Billingsley on the Food Coalition. Very you beat the people down until they send money, then you show them proof of the money coming in.
I learned it from watching John, all right?
Thank him. I'm trying to give you a compliment for Christ.
I'm taking it.
You know, I was looking, because that is one of the things with pancreatic cancer is it seems that when people get diagnosed, it is already so far advanced that there's nothing they can do about it. But looking at the symptoms of it, that's part of the struggle is the pain, usually in the abdomen or the back. How many people have pain in their back all the time? Unexplained weight loss. Stress happens, things happen. Jaundice, you can have jaundice for a significant number of reasons. Loss of appetite, nausea, change in stool, pancreatitis, new onset diabetes. These are such random symptoms that I can understand on some level why it's so hard to diagnose. And that is unfortunately why its survival rate is so low. But I was thinking as we were getting ready for tonight, one of the things that I was seriously considering asking and trying to figure out how to ask was, Kitty, when they said, you have pancreatic cancer, what was the first thing that went through your head? Where do your thoughts go when you get that diagnosis?
Literally, I said, oh, shit. And then I said, I'm not going to die. It turned out to be prophetic. Everybody thought I was nuts. I just thought I have things to do. I have things left to do, and I'm not going to die. I was really lucky. I was fitter than most people. I was younger than most people. I had great doctors. I had him. I had these guys. I had more than most people are lucky enough to have. I had stage 2B pancreatic cancer. I had an operation 2 weeks after I went into the hospital, and here, that was my 20th anniversary, and here I am. And I don't know why I'm here, except to make sure
other to give hope. Jonathan has told you to give hope.
Okay. So and my job really is to give hope, but also to make sure other people get the same chance I got.
But Kathleen, it's a very good question, and Kitty answered. I just want to make it succinctly. It does not mean it's fatal. It's right. Important to know that. If you get diagnosed, if you go to the right doctors, and PanCan will help you with that, it does not mean a fatality. It means you need to see a doctor ASAP.
Right.
One of the things you talked about, Armin, that was important was be your own advocate, but also connect with PanCan, because they can help you find a doctor that will be, that will look at it in a different way or has more experience with it. We always say this, the middle name of that organization is action, right? They take action, and they sort of push you to take action as well. And I think they're very valuable for that reason.
Well, Armin,
don't like the diagnosis, go to another doctor.
That's
call PanCan and go to another doctor. Kitty got a diagnosis that said, you're going to die. Ms. Swink, you're just going to die. Just get used to it.
Yeah.
And then we went to another doctor. And you know what? The first doctor, who was an expert, who was touted as the best in Los Angeles, he was wrong.
He said, we already had a doctor. Everybody said you have to get a second opinion. I didn't know about PanCan. It was 20 years ago. And he said, you're going to die. And I looked at Armin and I said, we're leaving. I could barely stand up.
Absolutely.
Weighed 90 pounds. I just got up and I walked out of the guy's office.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Question from the audience real quick. What have you guys learned about pancreatic cancer that most don't know?
For me, I think, again, I just reiterate what I just said. It's not a fatality. It's not good. No one's saying it's great diagnosis. No one's saying that. But it's not a fatality. And that's something I learned, not only from Kitty's case, but from being with the PanCan organization and seeing the success they had with survivability.
For me, it was the diabetes, because I didn't know that it could present as a completely different disease, right? I knew there was back pain and things like that, and you'd always heard about, upset stomach or whatever, but the idea that diabetes could be a precursor was new to me.
As was the jaundice with Daniel. Daniel was really yellow, which is why we finally took him to the hospital.
Right.
It was clearly so wrong, but jaundice, as Kathleen said, could be an indicator for many, many, many other things.
Mm-hmm. For me, the big surprise was the fact I always have back pain because I'm a jock. I'm always doing something stupid and athletic. I just didn't understand that the kind of back pain I had, the sort of gnawing, relentless back pain I had, was a disease and not an injury. Yeah.
Did it feel distinctly not muscular? Was it different than something you would get from working out now in retrospect, or?
Yeah, maybe. I think in retrospect, it sort of felt like a combo because I think everything tensed up around it.
Right.
So
right.
Combo of those two things. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yes. All right. Another question from the audience: what can each of us do to help raise awareness?
You can follow PanCan on any of the social media sites. They put out incredible information on things like diet, how to cook. If you've got cancer, what you can do in a dietary way. They talk about what's happening in new trials. They talk about this week, we've been really pushing people to ask their members of Congress to get that funding bill to the floor because there's $20 million in the defense budget for pancreatic cancer research. We want that. We want that on the floor of Congress to get voted on. So whatever your politics are, you want that budget to go to the floor for a lot of reasons, but one of them is so people will live long and prosper.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just retweet stuff too, you know, or post it on your stories and your reels.
Yeah.
They'll put stuff up, you know, and it's really great. It's a great way to raise awareness is just blast it, you know.
And if I may, just keep in the back of your head, just keep in the back of your head, if you're anybody who is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, tell them about PanCan.
Yeah.
Just tell them, oh, I heard about this thing. You know, it's called, I think it's called PanCan. Go online, look them up, send that information to the person that you that has the diagnosis.
I can't tell you how many people have come to me through the fact that they've been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and I've helped them through PanCan. I use PanCan as my secret weapon to help them. I have a friend right now who just got in. She's stage 4. She just got into one of the big clinical trials.
Wow.
Bless her. I'm so excited for her.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons we hold walks and things of that nature is because it gives us a place to put a flagpole. So I also think it's worth saying that raising awareness is about April 27, April 27, April 27, and there are 60 cities. So if you're communicating to a horde of folks on social media, it's maybe being aware of where they are and letting them know there's a location near them where they can walk. There's something about being with a lot of people who have survived and people who care and people who are committed that also raises, I think, people's inclination to get involved yourself, which is why the showing up with other folks is an important part of the gig.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. By the way, in Michigan, if you're one of the Michiganders that is listening to this Fine Here podcast, you can walk on April 27th outside of Detroit in the little suburb of Troy, Michigan. And I'm hoping to be able to have recovered enough from my shoulder surgery to make that walk. But if not, I'll slumber around the hospital room. It'll be fine. But I'll make sure that we're walking somewhere on April 27th.
And we'd love to have people join our contingent in L.A. if you happen to be in
the for sure.
It takes off from the Santa Monica Pier. And Jonathan Frakes is certainly willing to give you a piggyback ride for the first 5 or 6 hours if you make the height and weight.
Never mind then. Okay. I was like, oh, I'll sign up for that.
Might be a little big for a piggyback ride, Tim.
Yeah, just
also not the point.
I don't make it. I'm seeing if I can diet myself down to, but I don't know, April 27th.
You can't diet yourself down, John, because it's so great when you're asking people to give more money that you know, open your shirt. We need the whole vista.
The whole vista. That's my memoir title, Kitty. Thank you.
Auntie.
We were doing the auction on the Star Trek cruise last week, and John bared his chest multiple times, and I offered to give people big fat kisses, and we made a lot of extra money for those two things, I have to say.
We would have made more money if the offers had been reversed.
You set him up. You set him up for that one.
I did.
We're a team.
I didn't plan it, but, you know.
It's the PG-13 podcast, apparently.
Yeah, well, there's that. So, yeah, Drayton, I think a lot of people are actually disqualified from
that. Yeah, we used to have the slogan on the podcast of the all nerdy, never dirty. And it's kind of the all nerdy, sometimes dirty. We've grown up a little.
All nerdy, kind of dirty. So.
It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. It may offend, but it doesn't hurt.
As long as my daughter doesn't understand the jokes and my mom doesn't text me with the, how could you? I'm good.
It's more fun for me if I know that her mother is texting her, because then it's the steer into the skid, you know, and you just kind of go for it.
Hi, Mom.
Ben says, I know Kathleen would donate big money for a commander kiss. Just saying.
There you go. On the house.
Is this airing live?
Yes, sir.
So it's election day.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, it's coming up. And in the spirit of the dailies of Chicago, vote early and vote often. To quote Arm.
Do your kids get the jokes not ours? That's true.
Accurate.
That is a Renfest quote that my husband and I heard our first year at Renfest together, and both just laughed hysterically because it was the And now we have 5-year-old that we take to Renfest with us, and if she starts getting the jokes, that is definitely our problem.
There is truth in jest.
There is.
I enjoy it immensely when their daughter gets the jokes, because it's not my house. I like to pull the pin, throw the grenade in, walk away.
She is a force to be reckoned with. I love that girl. But absolutely. in the middle of a restaurant today, sweet little 5-year-old looks me dead in the eyes. What do dead people's eyes look like? What? Where did that come from? And everybody else in the restaurant whose head snapped and looked at her, I'm like, nope, I got nothing. I can't explain. Not a clue. Don't know where that came from.
They look the same. There's just no key light. That's it.
Right? There's just, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Eric, just a quick update. Another $50. Yeah. All right. Making some nice.
Yeah.
And we have people who are commenting on some of our Facebook posts, letting us know that they're donating and things. If you guys are watching and you want to put some of that on there, comment on the YouTube channel, comment on the Facebook post itself of the live show. We'll get your comments on screen. If you have questions for any of these fine folks here, even if you have one that you want to ask of me, which would be very misguided, but you have other more interesting people here to ask things of. But yeah, do that, and we'll get them on screen for you guys. So Heather says, it's so great to see you guys raising awareness. So
yeah.
And Drayton says, it's when they stop asking what those words mean that you have to worry. Kathleen, you are right here. You literally could just say, I have a question for Tim.
I'm helping the algorithm.
Oh, is that what you're doing? Okay. Tater tots or waffle fries? This is a long-standing inside joke, and it's definitely tater tots, especially when I'm about 6 Guinnesses in and singing to them. Yes,
I mean they were. Person, what are waffle fries?
What are waffle fries?
Yeah,
what are waffle fries?
Waffle fries.
Chick-fil-A is so disappointed in you right now. But yeah, so they're. It looks like a waffle. They make a potato.
French fries
woven
together like waffles.
It's like live long and waffle.
Okay, well, I'm doing all the jokes today.
How cute! 7 similitude in one place. Well, not one place at one time, but a stranger pearl. Wow! Did you want my autograph?
Similitude. That was Manny's episode on. That was his first episode on Enterprise. Similitude.
Let's see. There we go.
All right, up 87%. All right.
Awesome. Thank you. Good news.
Yay.
All right. And because I was on her live show this afternoon promoting this event, and we were talking about this, because I am such a large Star Wars fan, she wants to know, do any of you watch Star Wars?
Certainly. Yeah, we all watch. There's no shame in watching Star Wars if you're on Star Trek. In fact, a little known secret, I actually get a voice on Star Wars.
Oh,
you play on Star Wars. Games, yeah.
No, one of the films.
One of the films. I forgot you did that. Oh, yeah.
One of those fish creatures.
Oh, wow. Excellent. I did. Yeah, I love Andor. I thought Andor was fantastic. The latest things, yeah.
So we were talking about that in reference.
What about Mandalorian?
Love Mandalorian as well. I haven't seen the last season, but I enjoyed that show.
It's been very good, very enjoyable.
Yeah, and Robert Rodriguez, who I worked with, did the Boba Fett show, and he did the first Boba Fett episode of Mandalorian. It was really cool. So it was cool to he would text me during the pandemic when he was shooting that stuff and start telling me how they shot it. And it was the volume he was talking about, but it wasn't the volume then, right? He had just started using it. And he's like, I can't send you pictures because they'll kick me off the set if I send you pictures. But he was texting me, kind of explaining how it worked and stuff. It was pretty wild, pretty wild.
And because of his use of the volume, Star Trek, of course, felt they had to keep up and built an AR wall in Toronto and tried to get it up and running in a third of the time or that it took Mandalorian. And it was very revealing about how, first of all, how powerful it is. And secondly, how much lead time you need to get it right.
Wow.
Right. Right. Did you direct on it, Jonathan, or just work on it in Picard? You directed with it?
I have. It's a challenge to direct on because you have to, you can, especially if you're using multi cameras, you have to use different setups than you would ordinarily. You can't use the traditional two camera setup. You got to find another part of the wall to shoot if you're going to. It's gorgeous.
Because the cameras are synced to the wall, right? Because it pulls focus for you, or just one of them is.
Yeah,
only to the A. Gotcha. Yeah.
Now we're getting into weeds. I apologize.
Sorry.
I would have no
idea. Yeah. So what do you have to do? Like B camera has to be a profile or something?
Usually go across this and go to another part of the wall that's not being used by the A camera. So you
got
instead
it.
Of putting up as you would, you know, wide and tight, you literally have to go to another part of the forest. But it is it's astounding when it's good and it's necessary, but it's not
right. Right.
No, that's very cool because I was always wondering about that, especially with Mandalorian, you know, with that big, how that would be easy to film, B direct that because of everything that is behind him and how that fills the scene. So it's nice insight for those of us who are technologically impaired.
Yeah, to the actors, it's really. I mean, all the green screen work that we've all done is totally changed because. Instead of trying to describe who you'd be talking to or what environment you're in, you're literally in that environment and you could look around and feel it and smell it.
That's great.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's.
You can smell it?
Well, if you're looking at
it. I don't think I need that. As an actor, I would just say, I don't think I need to smell it.
No one really wants to know what Phlox smells like. You know what I mean? It's like, Dr. Phlox, can you get that checked?
I'm a little worried about that, bringing odors into the shot.
Is this a good time for me to ask you about your...
You sure it's not Dr. Flatch? I'm sorry.
Phlox's poxes, which was not unfortunately picked up. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Would you call your acting technique more method, or would you call it Stanislavski-esque, or are you a kind of actor that I could say, hit it and spit it? And
You can do that. You could do that. I wouldn't understand
it.
I would try it. Yeah.
What was the Spencer Tracy thing, Jonathan? Wasn't it remember your lines and don't bump into the furniture?
What happened to those actors?
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Hey,
they died.
That was a perfectly valid technique.
Yeah. I would just translate your direction, Jonathan, into Stanislavski in terms. I would do it privately, and then you know I wouldn't let you know that I was.
But smell wouldn't be part of that.
That's up to you. If you're saying do it as if you know, which is of course famous. Jolene Blaylock smells like cheese. I would take my best whack.
Oh man, Tim, did you just spit on your microphone?
I'm not saying she does smell like cheese. Don't take that the wrong way. That's an as if. That's a Stanislavskian as if.
Captain's log, we've set into orbit around the planet Havarti. And we're
full of that.
I mean, is that what was the cloud in original Trek that smelled honey sweet, remember?
Jolene is the one person you can make jokes about because she's completely outside of the Star Trek universe, so none of this gets back to her. Whereas Dominic, if you make jokes about Dominic, he'll hear about it.
Oh, you'll hear about it for sure.
Yes, yes, you will.
Yeah. You really have to be careful about who you joke about. Who can you joke about the most, Jonathan, without fear of repercussion? We can talk about pancreatic cancer again, but I just am curious to know. Who do you...
Besides you.
Besides me. Well, you needn't fear repercussions.
There's nobody on Next Generation that you can joke about. Except John. Except John.
Really? I need to mind my P's and Q's then.
Well, I don't know. It's a very good question. And I can think of all of the ones who I cannot joke about freely.
Let's make jokes about them.
Yeah,
exactly. Who should I not make jokes about first?
Let me ask you another question that an actor once responded to.
Are these written on the wall? You keep looking at the wall. Are they written on the wall?
No, I'm trying to think.
Oh, he's pondering.
Yeah.
You're out the window.
I don't know how to start doing that. Train and Huskies. Train
and Huskies.
I know what that means, Kathleen.
I got nothing, Kathleen.
Tim does usually. The train is going by my house and my neighbor's dogs are freaking out.
Oh, gotcha.
It Sorry. Was the as I heard the train start, I'm like, nope, not again.
What was your
code for get them back on track?
The secret podcast code. Make them entertaining again, please.
I would say that this show can't go off the rails because we're more of a hover train.
Okay.
That is my joke.
What were you going to ask, Jonathan? I love it.
An actor said to me, you know, my character would never eat this.
Oh, I hate that.
And your answer was?
Okay, fine.
You know what the writer would say? Who says it's your character?
Exactly. Oh, I love that.
That was apparently what David Chase said to somebody on Sopranos, where they were like, well, my character wouldn't do that. And he said, who says it's your character? isn't exactly right either, but it's a good line. The story I heard of Stephen Bochco, too, on...
On Hill Street,
with Daniel J. Trevante, right? Who said I would never say that. And Bochco said, "But look, yeah, that's your name, and those are the words. So yeah, you would say that."
Character is better.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of?
I've ever had the stones to do that on set, but anyway. Say again.
I've often said to Shakespeare, "I would never say that," but you know.
You're gonna do the character wouldn't say that. The writer says you're gonna say that. Like,
how do you say I wouldn't say that in iambic pentameter?
Yeah.
Right.
It just adds 15 minutes to the day. Well, we're gonna have to talk about what you wouldn't say, and everybody's gotta get on the act, and you never.
Dog, what are you doing? This dog is driving me crazy. Okay.
It's the Huskies and train.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, exactly.
There
he
is.
He needs to be paid attention to.
Oh.
He's sitting in my lap the whole time.
So beautiful.
He wanted to be on the internet, too.
He has been there more often than I have, actually.
Not to mention, when everybody comes over, they all...
I got a cat sitting right here.
All right, we have another question from the audience. What's the first thing Mr. Frakes ever directed?
J-Mo.
Oh, on television?
Would sure.
The episode of Star Trek The Next Generation called Offspring, in which Data creates and builds a daughter, played brilliantly by the talented Hallie Todd.
Yeah.
Said, how should I do this? I said, how should, she said, how should I behave? I said, watch what Brent does. And she learned that. Impersonation.
What was the first Deep Space Nine episode you directed?
The one that where Avery was stuck in the 20th century.
Oh yeah.
What was it? It was an office, a welfare office, or what the fuck was that called? He was great at it.
How come you never directed any Enterprise episodes? Was it?
You didn't watch it.
Well, that's
really.
Sucks.
I thought you had done those.
No, we were clamoring for him, but
the mistake the one big Star Trek mistake I was involved in was saying yes to the final episode of Enterprise, which we should have been left to its own.
There's no guarantee that it would have been any better, Jonathan. That's the thing. It's like, I mean, if you two were pulled out of a script, we would have still had a bad script just without you guys in it.
I don't have many regrets, but that's one of them.
Yeah.
All right. Timescale says, thank you for answering their question. Here's another one. And non-pancake question, but how has Star Trek shaped you into who you are today?
I'm fatter. I don't understand.
I was fatter until I went back to work as Riker, and my vanity drove me to lose 30 pounds to get back on camera.
Wow. I need some.
I know that's not what they want to know. To take all the levity out for a hot minute, I thought that if I could be as honorable and loyal as Commander Riker, I'd be a good father and a good husband.
Those things.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm going to put all the levity back in for one hot minute and say it made me appreciate polyamorousness.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm surprised at how many people actually were touched and moved by the fact that the Denobulans were a polyamorous society. I now have a lot of friends in the polyamorous community. Those of you who are listening who are in the polyamorous community, my wife, mind you, is not in that community. Just
to be clear.
Just to be clear.
I have a picture of Bonnie in my head right now. Yeah.
I had a head of hair before that rubber thing rubbed it all off. So.
That's not true.
No, but this is true. I lost some hearing from the head.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The head did change how well I could hear. I now wear hearing aids because I lost some hearing from wearing the head for 7 years. But it was worth it. It was worth it.
Our friend Michael Dorn lost pigment on his.
Yes, head. He did. Yes, he did.
Where the glue was on for.
Oh, no kidding.
Because he was stupid enough to rip it off. I watched him night after night rip off the makeup, which was he's a wonderful man, but. That was just stupid.
Yeah, what about the let's may he rest in peace? What about Renee? What he used to go and
my god.
Photo off.
Renee was equally stupid. This is why they were stupid. I didn't do any of that, and I got so much more overtime than they did because
That's right. The first calls.
That's awesome.
They got out early. Great. I paid for the house.
Yeah. But you can't hear him.
I'm like,
what?
He's like, what?
Jordy called me a couple days ago and said, I have to have bread. I'm coming up here to make bread. I said, do you have a particular order? He had a very specific order of what kind of bread he wanted.
Yeah. He's a pushy cleaner.
I was just thinking, though, Jonathan, getting back into shape for Riker, you have to be able to lift your leg up high enough to get over those chairs.
No. Like,
Kathleen, if I had a nickel.
But it's one of my favorite things about Riker. I think everybody loves that about Riker.
Let me say this about Riker. Riker was never better, sorry, Johnny, than in that last season of Picard. You were phenomenal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, phenomenal.
You were extraordinary.
Yeah. And you know why?
Because of Genie.
No, Genie, and the writing, that's true.
The writing was good, yeah.
Extraordinary performance.
And because you shot it in the volume.
No, we didn't shoot Picard in the
volume. I'm just joking.
Crisco and the other strange, as they call it. I love they call Strange New Worlds Strange. For short. Bubba for short's Strange.
I'm going to start calling it that now. I hadn't before, but I'm going to. Let's go.
So of all of the episodes of Star Trek that you guys have worked on, do you have favorites?
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite, Armin?
Far Beyond the Stars. It's an incredible episode. Brilliantly directed by Avery Brooks, brilliantly written. It's an anomalous episode because it doesn't really take place in space at all. It takes place in the imagination of a character that we had never seen before, played by Avery Brooks, not Sisko, but a character named Benjamin. And it's Star Trek at its best. Star Trek at its best is always dealing with social issues. It's dealt with racism in America, And
sexism.
And sexism. It is an extraordinary episode. I would put it up against not only the best of Star Trek, but the best of any TV.
Wow. No arguments here. It is one of my favorites.
Yep.
Anybody else want to share their favorites?
For a while, Star Trek was pro-sexism, but then it kind of found its way.
Box Ring. Holy Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, Manny's episode, Similitude, was probably my favorite in the 4 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, he was such a game changer for our show. We only had the four seasons, not the seven, but we would not have, I think, even had number four, but for Manny. And
yeah,
his episodes were a joy.
Yeah, no, it was a sort of a full circle lifelong dream for him, right? Because it was his first love on television as a kid, right?
What was it like for him to do that? If it was a lifelong dream, and then all of a sudden to be directing and writing, well, not directing.
For a while, it just like didn't seem real to him, you know, when he first started, because he had gone over there to help Brannon, and he met Brannon there, and it was just little by little, it just overwhelmed him in the emotional sense, right? He was just like, okay, it's a dream, right? And then when he got to really take the reins in season four and do the mirror stuff and all the stuff that he was doing, it just really unleashed all of that, you know, childhood fandom in him and he was able to just do everything he had always wanted to do with Trek and had plans, obviously, to do more. But I think they were starting all the Kelvin stuff and the J.J. Abrams stuff then, so that was why they cut it short, it seemed like.
Well, UPN itself was going under. I mean, there were so many reasons. It was really quite a miracle that we got four seasons, honestly. I mean, I think we had 10 million people watch our pilot episode and 10 people watch the next episode. That was fairly indicative.
Right.
Like, 10 of them, and one of them was my father, who gave me a negative review. It's like, now we're down to 9.
I
always count on my father to send me the negative reviews from newspapers too.
All of them started out poorly.
No, you said they started out big,
Yes, everyone watches the pilot episode, the first episode, but then it decreases measurably. In the first season, everybody's finding their legs, their sea legs during the first season. I think all of us did. I think Johnny would say the same thing about Next Generation.
Yeah, but the Next Gen was, I mean, there was a very hostile audience. As JC referenced earlier, the fans of the original series did not want to see a bald English captain with a French name, and they didn't want to see a Klingon on the bridge, and it was an android running things. It was, or a kid. I mean, it was... It took three seasons to really.
Yeah, third season is when it kind of blew up, and
that's when I was just going to mention Best of Both Worlds, which was when the Borg took Picard. That was probably the best.
Yeah.
But there were so many great episodes, though. I mean, Inner Light, and I mean, just there were so many. One of my favorite episodes of Next Gen, which I've pitched as a series, Jonathan. I forget the name of it now, but it's when you're undercover on the planet. Right, and that's about to get warp. I forget the name of the episode, but I've always thought that should be a great series. Right, it's like a series about the ships and the people who go to the planets right before they're about to get warp speed, and sort of introduce us. Right, that we're the aliens in the series. Right, it's basically about us as colonizers. Right, for lack of a better word. Do you remember the episode?
Wasn't that episode called First Contact that B.B. North was in?
Yes, I think so. Yes. Everyone can help, but yes.
Yes,
that's what it was. Yeah, and then you were in the hospital, right? You got knocked out, and it was like, and I just always thought that was a cool franchise for the series, right? It's to do a series where we're the aliens, right?
Yeah.
She wanted to mess with Riker.
What do you mean, we, Kemosabe?
All right, Billingsley, we got a quick question here for you. Here it is. Do you have a favorite writer named Jay?
That must be Jay Stobie writing in. I think this is a sucker punch question. Jay Perini.
Excellent writer.
There you go. All right, Jay Stobie, there's the answer for your question.
Jay Cox is also a very good writer. J.G. Ballard is a good writer.
J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I want to personally thank Jay. Jay was instrumental. We couldn't have done it without him. We had a thing called Trek Against Trump back when Trump was running. Jay was enormously instrumental.
J.J. Abrams?
No, Jay Stobie.
No, Jay Stobie.
For helping me get that created, and thank you, Jay.
And Jay Stobie was instrumental in getting Trek Talks going, and instrumentality is Jay's middle name. He doesn't use it. That would be J.I. Stobie, but I think you should go back to that, Jay.
And as long as we're talking about all the cool things that Jay has done, he's also one of the reasons why I got into article writing for a couple different websites. He and I had some nice long conversations, and I probably wouldn't be writing if it wasn't for Jay. So thanks, Jay.
Jay is a very generous soul.
Yeah,
he also is one of those rare guys who like buttons his. This is something. Jay buttons his collar up all the way to the very top. So when you meet him, you think he might have just gotten out of the priesthood. I've never understood. Yeah, you can unbutton that now. Liberate yourself. Liberate yourself.
And show a little skin.
And show a little skin. For those of you who know Jay Stobie, I have so Jay. You know Jay. This is a tactical mistake on your point part because I have so much diss on you. Oh my god.
Oh, Jay's a good dude though. He really is.
John Billingsley diss track. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. There we go. All right. Somebody asked. They're asking this because I think they missed it early on. Back to Pancan, why purple?
There we go.
Thank you, Drayton Allen, for getting all this crap.
Back on track here to wrap it up.
Yes.
I don't know why purple. Kitty, do you know why purple?
I don't. Pam Marquardt, who started it, because her mother passed from it, and she realized there was no organization like there was for other cancers, just liked the color purple, and she thought it went well with P for Pan, and I think that's how we got our name. There you go.
You know,
Jay, 25 years. Isn't it 25 years this year?
Yeah, I think it's 25 years this year. Yeah.
So according to a quick Google search, Kitty, you are right that it is a tribute. It's a one woman's tribute of love for her mother.
Yeah. No, I knew I was right about that. It's really because Pam likes purple. And her husband, God bless him, every year for Purple Stride, wears an entire purple outfit, including purple makeup, purple. He's completely covered in purple.
Wow.
It also represents Christ's sovereignty, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just happen to know that. Not
because purple was a royal color during the Middle Ages. You couldn't, in fact, in Elizabethan times, you couldn't wear purple. If you wore purple, you would be fined or thrown in jail.
Unless you were
the king. There was a period of time in which LeVar Burton only autographed things in purple.
Really?
Oh, wow.
See, you find out.
I know, Beatrice. That's the other job.
This is interesting, since we've talked about religious things. Our father was against Star Trek, the TOS, because he said Spock looked like Satan.
Wow.
I don't know that I've ever had that reaction with Spock.
Did he know Satan?
The family resemblance?
Some people, it's their ex. I don't know, but... I'm going to
make a pitch for the fact that Star Trek is one of the most Christian of shows because it believes including welcoming your neighbor, including people in, taking care of the poor. It believes in all those things that Christianity is a
old Moat and the other guys, board in your own thing that I always liked in the Bible.
Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. All right. Heather Johnson wants to know, Jonathan, what was your favorite all-time line of Rikers?
Sometimes you get the bear and sometimes the bear gets you. Riddler!
Really? Did you say that?
Those are my two favorites.
All right.
Very cool. And reminder, guys, if you haven't donated already, you have opportunity to do that.
Purple Stride.
There it is.
Where are we on the leaderboard? Let's get an update on the leaderboard.
Let's see. I don't think we've had any updates as of yet. That's why I was bringing it back up. Yeah, no recent donations. We're still sitting at... I can put this on the screen, though. How about I do that? Because, you know, maybe it'll help people get in the donating mood. There we go. So We are Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer is still sitting at a whopping 87% of that fund raised at $108,175.55 of the $125,000 goal. So we have opportunity. Guys, go click that link down in the show notes down below. And if you make a donation, we will make sure to put that up on the screen and update the leaderboard as it's going, because we, of course, want to continue to get as much as we can for these guys, as many donations as we can get entered onto the screen.
It's not for us. It's for the people that are diagnosed with the disease.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
there's a comment on YouTube that I know Tim could pull up talking about Next Gen. I'm surprised that Next Gen wasn't well received in the beginning, but is now considered more Star Trek than the original series.
Oh, there's more of it.
There is more of it. There is. But I just thought that was an interesting outlook on it with the...
Because the original viewers like myself have all died off. And so the people that grew up with Star Trek grew up with Next Generation.
You're here. My brother's here. I'm here.
Yeah, but not.
And Jonathan Frakes is available to go to a convention in any town in America. So,
and does.
So he single-handedly spreads the gospel of Next Generation. I also am available, by the way, to go to a convention anywhere in America, but I'm not.
I was going to say, how often does that actually happen?
Often asked.
We would love to have you, any of you, come to the Monroe Pop, not the Monroe Pop Fest anymore. It's now the Monroe Comic Con in Monroe, Michigan, September 13th and 14th.
Monroe, Michigan is on my bucket list. This is an amazing confluence.
Well, see, there it is. Opportunity. But yeah.
No guy.
It's one of the Comic Cons that we help. We don't help run it. Let's not get confused here. But we do run the panel.
Room, it's a mythology to think that we choose where we go.
Yeah.
Yes. We don't choose where we go. We're asked, and then we decide whether we want to go or not. But first you have to be asked before you get to go.
I'm trying to break that mold and start a new way of looking at it.
And look how well you're succeeding.
I'm already going to Monroe. I wasn't going to Monroe at the top of the show. Now I'm going to Monroe.
We would love to see you come to Monroe.
What a bitch. Oh, it's dinner time. You know what? I'll be right back. I have to feed the dogs.
And we just had a nice update to the leaderboard here.
Yes.
Bringing it up to the screen. We just got a $100 donation from.
Thank you.
Is this out of enthusiasm that I'm going to be coming to Monroe, right, Michigan? Because I'll bring the wine.
Love it.
Come on, let's go feed you.
So yeah.
Thank you for giving.
Yeah, so awesome. Thank you, Justin. And as we have on the bottom of the screen there, timescale says Mr. Frakes need to yell "rel alert" in public places as often as possible.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do.
Does it get people out of your way?
It does. It does.
Worth it.
That's half the battle, right there.
I unfortunately have a Hollywood Food Coalition Development Committee meeting that I have to go to.
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
Well, we'll just keep talking about you behind your back then, right?
Yes, I couldn't get the time changed. So
yeah, people downstairs that expected me earlier. Can I say thank you?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
Thank you,
guys.
Thank you.
Because April 27th.
Yes.
April 27th.
Yes.
April 27th.
Always.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. 60 cities.
If you're this big and you weigh this much, Jonathan Frakes is going to give you a piggyback ride if you get to the Santa Monica Pier.
Fair enough. Dressed in purple.
Rest in purple.
Yeah. And there's another $50.
There's $50. That's $50. He's aiming to get on Jonathan Frakes' shoulder.
Excellent.
Betcha.
Peace out, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan, thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
Nice to have met you, sir.
All right.
Mr. Billingsley.
Thank you, guys.
Live long and proud. Bye,
John.
All those things.
Bye. Juan Carlos, great to see you as always.
Good to see you.
Thank you, guys.
So what can we answer?
Absolutely. Let's see here. Let me get back on my game here. All right, so we have a couple other questions that were sent in to us. One of them is for Juan Carlos here. So Juan Carlos or JC?
Yeah, JC. Either one.
You have worn writer, director, and producer's hats over the years. Is there one of those ways that you prefer to share your artistry?
I mean, I think ultimately producer, because if it's a show that I'm running, because you're kind of involved in all aspects of it and you get to sort of, you sort of, control isn't the right word. It's too strong of a word, but you get to sort of be in charge of the voice of the show. And that's really the orchestra, right? That's directors, writers, everybody, right? But in terms of anxiety, I'd say writing is the highest one. And then directing follows that. But it's the thing about directing anxiety is there's 150 people on set helping you handle that anxiety. So it's a little easier. But yeah, I think that being a writer producer slash producer is really it's a kind of a modern form of expression, I think, you know, with so much content on the air now. No.
No.
I did it in college, but no. I don't know. Never tried it. I tried it in college. I mean, I did it. I enjoyed it. But I've never pursued it.
And when you're dealing with actors on a set, how do you get them to give you the type of reactions that you're hoping to get?
I mean, for me, it depends, right? If it's obviously a show that we've been on for a long time, in a lot of ways, I feel like it's my job to sort of stay out of the way and sort of create an environment where the actor feels free to sort of contribute and do things. A lot of times what I will do is just say, you know what, kind of forget what's there for a second and let's just do one, you know? And other times I'll try to find a piece of either backstory or something else that maybe they hadn't considered, right? This just depends on where they're at, right? If it's one of our actors on the show who know the character and oftentimes more better than I do, then it's just about collaborating and asking questions and you know what I mean, and getting them to that place. With guest characters, I try to give them a story because on 9-1-1 we do a lot of, and this is before we even get to set and when they get the script. On 9-1-1 we do a lot of these what we call cases, right, where it's two or three people involved in some harrowing situation. It's going to be 7 pages, and they're only there for that part of the episode, right? But those characters all have a story. There's a reason they're in the car that wrecked, whatever. So I try to give them stuff that doesn't appear on screen, but helps them, you know, sort of get a sort of locate the character, as it were. You know,
I always found what you said to be absolutely true, that the directors were less than eager to direct the series regulars or the very recurring characters, but they began to give notes to the guest stars because for whatever rule, whether it's that reason, which I think is probably the right one, or whether it was politics, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, absolutely.
I would just always also lead with a question, right? Especially if it's a series regular, I would say, you know, would he or she say that, or what, you know, where does this come from? Is there a previous episode that I missed? Or, you know, I just try to sort of respect the fact that they do. I mean, besides my previous joke, they do own the character, right? You know, it is their character.
Well, it's a collaboration. It's
yeah, for sure.
Character and the writer's character. They're hand in hand.
Team sport.
Absolutely.
That's what I always say. It's a team sport.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see, we're going back to my notes here. Now, I'm asking this for a very, this is a question from me, because I was looking up, and as I think both Kitty and Armin can attest to, before somebody comes on my show, I try to do a little bit of deep dive information about them, find out some things about them so I can have something to ask. But is there a show that you guys have worked on that wasn't as successful as you guys, any of you, wanted it to be? What was that show, and where can people find it?
There was a show called Almost Grown that the man who gave us The Sopranos created. It was the first show.
David Chase, yeah.
And I can't believe I said that since he was my boss. And it had Tim Daly was one of the leads, and Eve Gordon was the other lead, and it went back and forth in time, and I played Eve's business partner, but we were college age and we were in our 40s. And it was just the writing was great, and the acting, you know, I was there for a minute and a half before we got canceled, but I remember TV Guide, when it used to be TV Guide, said the best show that nobody's watching in the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, but that, it was just a superb set to be on. It was just, I thought the episodes were wonderful to watch, and the ones that aired, and I thought it was a great show.
For myself, I've been lucky enough to do over 100 different TV shows. But there was one, and it lasted 3 seasons, but it should have had a lot more hoopla. Yeah. And it's an extraordinary show. It was called Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh my God, what a show.
So great.
What a show.
It was extraordinary, and it was a sitcom, sort of, but we rehearsed it as a play, which is it's close to my heart, and it was an ensemble. It was a great show with great actors, great writing.
It was Gary David Goldberg, right?
That's right.
And
we shot it. It took 8 days to shoot a half-hour program, and the story that I was told, whether it's true or not, it may be apocryphal, is that the studio came to Gary and said, this is a half-hour show. You have to get it done in 5 days, which is the normal routine for half-hour shows. And he said, no, it has to be 8 days. And they said, well, if you don't get it down to 5 days, then we'll just cancel the show. And he said, we're not going to sacrifice quality for that. And so they canceled the show. It was a brilliant show. Brilliant.
I wonder if it's not on Paramount Plus, is it? It was a CBS show.
It was a CBS show. I don't know if it is or not. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it anywhere, really, since it got canceled. It was an extraordinarily well-written show with wonderful, wonderful performers.
Marion Ross was my grandmother. She was exactly like my grandmother.
Really?
I mean, it was – oh, yes. It was stunning. Stunning. We love that show.
Yeah. My favorite episode was when they found out the Dodgers were moving from Brooklyn to LA, and how freaked out everybody in the family was. And I thought, well, we have a friend who was a commercial casting director whose father moved his family to Los Angeles from Brooklyn because he was so upset. So I completely understood.
Marion, wow. It was about a Jewish family living in Brooklyn. And Marion Ross talked like this on the show. She had a very
Bunker. Yeah.
She had a Jewish accent like this.
Like your grandmother.
And Marion is not Jewish. And I said to Marion, and all day long, this is the way she talked, on camera, off camera, it was always the same, just like this. And I said, Marion, do you ever come out from that exorcism? She said, darling, it's too hard to go back and forth.
Wait, didn't she have a Fargo accent sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes she would do a Fargo accent.
Oh,
gosh. Wow. For me, there were two shows like that because there was a period after the first show I was on was called The Pretender, which in its time was deemed not hugely successful, but it went for 4 seasons and it had 13 million viewers on Saturday night. So I was like, it would be a massive hit now. Right. But there was a period of about 10 years where I was on either first year shows or last year's shows. And there were two shows in that period. One was a show called Invasion. It was on ABC. That was about an alien invasion. It was run by Sean Cassidy. And it was about Cubans in Florida and in the Everglades. It had William Fichtner and an amazing actress named Carrie Matchett. And we only did 13. It was on after Lost. That was sort of the problem. It was a big kind of mythology show, and people watched Lost, and then they got to Invasion. They were just fatigued, right? They couldn't. It was just like too much. So
their brains were lost.
It was a really really cool show. Yeah, and then the other one was Journeyman, which was a time travel show that I did for Fox that I worked on. It was actually on NBC, but it was made by 20th, and it was Kevin McKidd he had been on Rome and has now been on Grey's Anatomy for years, but he played a guy who sort of stumbled through time, and it was a great time travel show. It got killed by the strike. We finished it before the strike, and then the strike just kind of killed a bunch of stuff. That was the 2008 strike. Okay. So those were two that I did that I thought, you know.
No. Okay. Well, the reason I bring that up is because I was as I was finding some information out today, I was looking through a few things, and I found a show that Kitty and Armin had both been on with another one of our former guests, Liz Vassy. And I was like, where can I find this show? Because I, from what I can tell, there was only 7 episodes made about it.
Nikki and Nora?
Yeah, Nikki and Nora.
There's more behind this. It was a CBS pilot that was written by Nancy Lee Myatt, and I was supposed to go to New Orleans and shoot the pilot, but I went into the hospital with pancreatic cancer first.
Oh wow. Okay.
And
20 years ago, wow.
Yeah, and then the show, it was the year that there was the malfunction in the Super Bowl show.
Malfunction.
CBS panicked about having a show. It was Nick and Nora Charles, only they were gay detectives, gay women detectives in New Orleans. And that was that's the log line. So it somehow the pilot got leaked. So anyway, CBS dropped it because they were worried, and somehow the pilot got leaked on the internet, and there was this huge swell, and they got the rights back and made a web series of it. And Jim Beaver and Armin and I and Liz Vassy and and then they were going to make a second season, and I don't know what happened.
Because I was trying to find it today, because I'm like that has an amazing cast on that show.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that's the whole reason why I'm asking about these other shows, ones you've been involved in. I thought it would just be kind of an interesting topic because there's so many good people on that show. I was like, man, that would have been amazing.
I'll find out where it's, because I think it's streamable. I'll find out for you where it is.
Okay.
We are great friends of Liz Vassy, and she is actress and an extraordinary writer. She has become a writer.
Yeah, she's a really good writer. Yeah.
Yeah, when she was on our show, she was talking to us about a pilot that she was writing, and I know that one of her shows has been greenlit, and she's working on that and everything. So I'm very excited for her, and yeah, so she's done some really cool stuff, and
yeah.
Not to mention that she's one of my favorite characters from Tick ever, but you know, that's a whole other topic.
And you know, I was on Tick as well.
What's that?
I was on Tick as well.
Yes, you were.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was an old supervillain. I was 130 years old, and it was the worst makeup, not the worst. It was the longest, most strenuous, most arduous makeup I had ever involved. In fact, on the third day, I think I was literally in tears thinking, if I can't take this, who can? There were two makeup artists, and they were working, I think, 3 hours to make me up.
Oh, wow. So it was more than the standard cork of 2 hours.
Yes, it was a lot more. It was substantially more.
I like your balloons.
You got the balloons, Woo-hoo. Yeah. I'm doing that, yeah.
Is that what did it?
It doesn't do it all the time. Only when you're not
expecting this too.
Oh, look at how cute
there you are. Go. There you go.
You do this, you get this one's good too. Let me see.
Wow.
Yeah, look at that.
See, we don't know anything.
That's great. How do you do that?
Can we just do two that? Thumbs up. You can get a little bubble here if you want. You do that.
We can play this.
It's snowing.
So what was your live show about? Oh, we did just screen effects the whole time, seeing what we could unlock. All right. It looks like we got a couple more donations here real quick.
Yay.
Let's see. Let me get my... Work my buttons here.
Barry's chest.
No.
All right, we've got and no Billingsley to show his chest. How disappointing! All right, so we've got.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much, everyone. Wow, it's great.
Yeah, so we're up to $435, just short of recent donations by Troy Sevigny and Matthew Batkins of each of $51.50.
Thank you.
Let's see. Jesse says, Armin will forever be Principal Snyder.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. No, actually, I won't.
He's not.
He's the total opposite from what I've seen. Everybody's favorite principal to hate.
Yes, exactly. It was lovely. I that was a show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Actually, I saw Juliet Landau today, who was on the show as well, where we met. I was only, I said to them when I got that job, I said, you know, guys, I have a day job. I put on makeup for a living. And they said, oh, we're going to kill the principals off on a regular basis. And they just kept me around forever for 3 years, which I was very grateful for. It was a wonderful show. But I never understood why they kept me around. I was happy. And what an asshole he was. He was
an asshole. I remember when we interviewed you, Armin, we were talking about the why does somebody who obviously hates children so much decide to become an educator?
So he could take out his vengeance on them. But it's a wonderful show, and it's a great show that deals with the angst of being a teenager, which I really adored a lot of the stories that they wrote. Mm-hmm. And Joss Whedon and company, the writers, were extraordinary.
Oh, my showrunner was on that show for most of the run, Tim Minear.
He runs 911. Yeah.
So Tim was on that show, and then he went and did Angel.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
And with all due respect to my wife sitting next to me here, Michelle Geller was one of the finest actresses I ever worked with.
That's right.
Jess Sarah was extraordinary.
Okay.
Yeah, I am on a pause of a rewatch of Buffy and Angel in chronological order, which is very complicated. And there's a website that has it all on which episode you have to watch in which order.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun though, because they don't always necessarily go in the air order either.
Right.
Because there's a couple of times where storylines on Buffy are two or three episodes, but you'll have to skip and then watch two episodes of Angel and then go back to Buffy to then watch two episodes of Angel. And it's like, well, that's complicated, but it's fun the way that the story arcs.
I didn't realize that they were working in tandem like that. I thought they were just two separate shows with similar characters.
Well, you had some crossover.
Yeah, we had some.
I figured they have crossovers, but it would time out. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, there's a few that it's pretty interconnected. And there was, right. I mean, there was somebody, I think it was somebody on Reddit who even did the, if you watch the first 35 minutes of this episode, and then when Angel leaves, start watching that Angel episode. And I'm like, no, that is too far for me. I'm not going to go with when Angel walks out of Buffy's house, that then he's walking into, no, that's too much.
I think that's a fan's fantasy. I really don't think it worked that way.
I don't think so either.
I love that people have that much time on their hands.
Yes, exactly.
But I don't.
But I'm also worried that people have that much time on their hands. Because you
can do a similar thing with Doctor Who and Torchwood, too, where you can get the storylines to bounce in the right directions. And that's...
I've never seen Torchwood.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Torchwood was really good.
Was it?
Until the Children of Earth miniseries, that one was... Gut punch.
Oof.
Nicole says that Armin will forever be Quark.
No, I won't. For Nicole, yes. I will be Professor Shimmerman. I taught her Shakespeare.
Just a little closer, I think, probably to Principal Snyder. I'm just saying.
No, it's nothing like Principal Snyder.
That's gotta be like...
I teach Shakespeare on a regular basis. I'm a very good teacher of Shakespeare. I know quite a bit about it. And
you're not me.
No, not me. I think I'm very supportive to my students.
Timescale said Doctor Who. Did somebody say Doctor Who?
It happens.
It's wibbly wobbly, timey wimey. It just
I'm curious about you guys, Tim and Kathleen. What got you into all this? Yeah. What was your gateway drug?
Which part are we?
Just I don't know.
All of it. Okay.
My parents. It was 100% my parents.
Really?
Yeah.
What were they into?
Therapy.
I don't know if my mom's still watching or not. Anyway, my parents got me into Star Trek. So when I was a kid, it was the new episodes of Deep Space Nine. So we were watching DS9 when it was airing. But also then we would go back and watch Next Gen. I remember my dad introducing me to the original series, Voyager, all of it.
Wow, that's great.
And then, like, I don't even remember the first time I saw Star Wars, because I just grew up watching Star Wars. So then when Phantom Menace came out, my older brothers were like, hey, we're going to go see this new Star Wars movie. Do you want to come with us? Sure.
Yes.
More Star Wars? Totally. And then it was my dad again with Doctor Who in 2005 when they brought Doctor Who back with Christopher Eccleston. My dad did the, hey, your mom and I used to watch this. I think you guys would like it. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure, I'll try it. And that first episode with Rose and the Nestine Plastic, and it's the, what am I watching? What is this? This is the crappiest CGI I've ever seen. What is this campy nonsense? And then by the end of the episode, I'm like, oh, never mind, I love this. I need more of this. This is fantastic.
Wow. But how did you get into this business?
That's all Tim's fault.
That is all my fault.
Yeah. That is all Tim.
I got into this because in 2019, my daughter spent 97 days in the hospital with a disease called Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an autoimmune disease that attacks the central nervous system.
Right.
She was 33 days in the ICU, paralyzed from the neck down, on breathing assistance, feeding tube, the whole nine yards. So when I came out of the hospital with her, my head was a bag of wet cats and I was a mess. And I was trying to learn how to deal with things that had happened in my youth. And I wasn't really handling all those things very well. And then you add on these things on top of it. And I needed the help of a competent therapist. I didn't understand it at the time that I did. And so part of my therapy was that they told me that, you should start writing a journal, which this is the reason why I said it's up to the reason. One of the reasons I've been writing now is because of Jay Stobe. Had it not been for Jay and giving me encouragement, I don't know that I probably would have continued to reach out for, because when my therapist suggested that I should write a blog, I laughed at her because I was like, I'll never be a writer. those were the exact words that were said. And then after that, she suggested that I do a video blog. And I'm like, I'm not going to sit there and just talk into a microphone the whole time. That's stupid, too. And so, as you can see, in kind of a self-fulfilling thing, I'm doing both things. So I started a podcast because my friend suggested, well, you know, why don't you start a podcast and make it about other people, not what you're going through, and talk about how they're overcoming some of their things. And so one of the things that my wife and I had said, and it would kind of become our mantra while my daughter was in the hospital, was the saying that all we can do is focus on moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what life is throwing at us, all we can do is focus on forward. So when I came out with a show, my first show was called Focused on Forward. And I would have people come on the show and we would talk about what they had gone through, but more so how they had worked on overcoming it, what they were doing to battle the everyday, what they were doing to put one foot in front of the other. And it was meant to be an encouraging landscape where, you know, people could talk about their things, but we weren't spending all this time, a very truncated amount of time, really, about the actual disease or whatever the issue was itself. I wanted the majority of it to be positive and upbuilding and talking about the good things that were happening, because a lot of people that I was having on the show were involved in all these different things, all these different charities and doing good for good people. And so I wanted to highlight those things, because one of the things I had realized during that time in the hospital is that I had all these people who were coming in and doing good things for us. And they were doing all these great things for us, and they were assisting us in so many different ways. And I wanted to be able to give back in some way, some form. And so in a lot of ways, that's why I'm sitting here today, is because even though I don't have a personal connection to pancreatic cancer, I've met Kitty and I've talked with Kitty and I've met Armin and heard both of their stories and their connection. And it made me wanted to reach out and be part of this and help out and help somebody that I don't know, because I have opportunity to try and help somebody that I don't know.
Right.
Because I had so many people that did that for my family. Maybe
we ask how your daughter is doing and how did she recover?
She is doing very well. She is, she'll be 18 this year. She is
so annoyingly
me, it's not even funny. Oh my God.
She's not allowed to be 18.
Yeah, I've tried. It didn't work. I also told her she wasn't allowed to be 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
She didn't listen to anything. Never listen. The young never listen.
No, they don't. They never listen. But she is day to day. She's walking, you know, she does all those things. She's, if we're out and about for long periods of time, she has a walker. She has a wheelchair. We use those if needed. She has medicine. She'll have this the rest of her life. She battles pain and other issues. Since then she's been diagnosed with fibromyalgia and,
Tourette's.
And our family, dives very heavily into dark humor. So I apologize if this offends anybody, but we also say that our family's like Pokemon. We're out there just collecting all the diagnoses that we can. So we got to catch them all.
Yeah.
But, so I went through Focused on Forward, and then I got started with this show here because I interviewed the original show host's son on Focused on Forward. And he said, well, hey, why don't we start a podcast for our Facebook group, because our Facebook group is up to 213,000 members now.
Wow. Congratulations. Wow.
Yeah. Thank you. And so
that's great.
I was like, sure, I got a microphone. Let's do this. And then before we knew it, we were off interviewing people, talking to people, because we all have we had such diverse wants and likes in the sci-fi world, which at the beginning, I'll be very, very bluntly honest, I hated Star Trek. I mocked Star Trek pretty openly because I really did not like Captain Kirk.
Right.
Never liked him. Never made sense to me. I didn't like TV Kirk. I did like movie Kirk. There was a big difference in the way that character was portrayed in between those two. But as Jesse says, I got you into Trek. Well, I helped. Yes, she did. She's one of the ones that recommended me that I watch Prodigy and Lower Decks. So I watched those. And I was like, well, these aren't so bad. These are actually kind of fun. And then I watched Strange New Worlds. And that was really my gateway drug. I was off and running after that. And
great.
So I'm into TNG now. I tried going back and watching TOS, but I still had some issues with TOS. I didn't finish the entirety of the series. But what I did appreciate about TOS and what kept me pushing forward with it, and this as a lifelong Star Wars, deep Star Wars fan, like Star Wars is in my very soul. It's kind of who I am. It's part of my everyday.
He's already started indoctrinating his 2-week-old grandson.
You're damn right. We had Jedi training this past weekend.
He didn't hold his head up yet.
That's not the point. I started going through it and finding the things that about Star Trek that I liked is I don't recall a time when I've ever watched something in Star Wars where I felt like I had to shut it off so that I could process what I had just watched and how that affected my life and how that would affect people around me and what that show was actually trying to tell me, you know, what the importance of that episode was. And I think that in itself is a testament to how amazing Star Trek really is. Because it's taken me a while to get to that point to be able to appreciate it. Because I'm 47 now. I've only really been paying attention to Star Trek for the last 2, maybe 3 years of my life.
Yeah.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, if you go back to our episode zero.
Star Trek was always meant to introduce people to social issues. Never come up with answers. Never come up with answers.
Yeah.
But just that simply ask questions and allow the people that are watching to discuss it. One of the great joys of my life is to hear people constantly say, we used to watch Star Trek with our family. Our family would get together, sit around the campfire and watch the video, the screen. And sometimes they would say, and then we'd have discussions about that episode. That's what I think is the best part of Star Trek. Yes, the excitement is enjoyable. Yes, the characters are lovely. But the issues are what I think are very important.
Did you, I know you and Manny watched it together. With anybody else in your family watch it, JC?
Yeah, so he tells the story, or he told the story that my parents were watching it when he was younger, when it was on. And he didn't quite get it. My parents were watching it, and which frankly was surprising to me because my parents were Cuban and you know they watched television, but you know English wasn't their first language, whatever. I mean, but my dad was a physician, so obviously he knew enough English. And my mom taught English in Cuba and then taught Spanish here. So they certainly watched the show and were into it, but he wasn't into it at first, right? And then when it came on syndication, he went crazy, right? And he just watched it consistently. And then to the point where he knew, because back then you had to kind of look at the TV guide, the printed TV guide, and know which episode was coming, right? So he knew the order, and he knew when there was a run coming that was his favorite run, which was, you know, Doomsday Machine. And you know, it was always building up to whatever he wanted to watch, right? But so he got me hooked on that, and then we started watching together. And like I said, we'd go to conventions in Orlando, which at that point, I mean, I think Walter Keating showed up once, but it was mainly just
he was just there last week and stuff.
Yeah,
he was just there last week.
Really?
Yeah.
And so it was just memorabilia and stuff. I have this great photo. It's online. I posted it online, but it's Manny watching Star Trek at age 13. I don't know how I could say. Can I send it? Can I put it in the chat? I don't know if I can put it in the chat.
You could share it to the screen. Yeah, you should be able to do that or share it to the screen. Either way, but yeah,
it is the greatest. It's such a great picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Please. And just for a heads up, we just got another 5150. And
yay, thank you.
From Michelle here, I'm not going to try and slaughter your last name. Thank you so Peralia? Much, Michelle.
Would you say we'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I like that. So what she said, yeah, Michelle, thank you so much. And guys, appreciate all the donations you guys are putting out here tonight. Absolutely. This is fantastic.
And Tim, thank you for your story about your background.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, so then to sort of continue Tim's story too. So then after he started hosting, there were a couple of interviews early 2021 that he's like, hey, would you be interested in guest co-hosting on this? Like we,
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Either there's a we're going to interview Star Wars voice actor Julie Dolan or Phineas and Ferb creator Dan Povenmire. Would you be interested in going on either one of those? And I'm like, Dan Povenmire, 100%. Like, yes, I want to be on that interview yesterday. Like, I love Phineas and Ferb. But that was also 4 months after my dad died. And so it was I'm like, hey, look, a thing I can do that we're still in the middle of the pandemic, we're still not really getting to go and do as much as we want to. I had also, at that point, since the pandemic started, early 2020, my daughter was 18 months old when the pandemic started. We were then trapped in the house with a 2-year-old. I'm like,
right.
Any excuse to be at the other end of my house in my room for 45 minutes? Sure, I would love to get in on this interview. And then Tim realized that I am the personification of glitter. Once you let me into your house, I am not leaving. You can vacuum as much as you want. I am stuck in your carpet forever. You just can't get rid of me. It's just... I'm everywhere. You're stuck. You will find glitter for the rest of your life. He also has frequently said that I am the little sister that he never wanted.
What stuck with anyway?
You're so welcome. You know what's funny though? I'm pretty sure my actual brothers would say the same thing about me with we didn't want her either. And yet
you can't choose your family, but you can choose your friends. Obviously, your friends. So.
We are. I've adopted his family and tease his daughter frequently that she's my favorite niece. And instead of calling her my niece, she's my niche.
That's great.
And Tim has also realized that he and I are enough alike, and he and his daughter are enough alike that he then sees Kendall in me and has those moments of oh no
it's actually very true.
Yeah, and then you get us together and things go berserk and it's hilarious.
Did I see another
another $50 from
thank you.
Matthew Weiss. Thank you, Matthew. This is awesome, guys. You guys rock. thank you for your donations, your continued donations.
And thank you, Jesse. I would like to say I'm one of a kind as well, but then I created another version of myself.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
Smaller, my five-year-old.
I'm going to your comments.
Yes. Smaller, louder, a little more less of a filter.
Connect your YouTube account to. I don't know how to do that.
And Juan Carlos, forgive me for not knowing who became the writer. Manny was the writer first, and then
because he was my big bro. So it was, you know, he basically started. We were all kind of writers to a degree because we had an uncle who was a great uncle who was a songwriter in Cuba, and then my grandmother, the Marion Ross character, was sort of a frustrated poet, and she really taught us all to love books and love words, and then subsequently love movies. So he sort of stole my dad's Super 8, you know, and started making short films, and that's how we started, you know, the splicing Super 8 movies and all that kind of stuff. And so I sort of learned that from him, and he studied, you know, he bought the making of Star Trek was one of the first how-tos that was really published back in the day. You know, it was David Gerald's book, right? And he was one of the writers. And that was actually a pretty cool, involved, you know, book that, you know, you remember at that time there wasn't anything like that. And it was a book that kind of discussed how, you know, how the sausage was made, so to speak, right? So it kind of opened your eyes to the fact that that actually existed, right? So I just started doing that. And then I went into journalism. I went down to the University of Miami, became a journalist, wrote for the Herald, but was always wanting to either be a novelist or a screenwriter or something like that. You know, being in South Florida, there was a lot of Hemingway down in the Keys and stuff. So there were dreams of writing novels, but he, you know, Manny came out here and he was like, you've got to come out. So, you know, I sort of got the bug from him and came out and just started writing. I mean, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but.
What did the papers say when you said I'm leaving you for Hollywood?
Well, I remember the TV critic, a guy named Steve Sonsky, who was a fantastic television critic, was my supervisor. So he put out a letter to the staff saying, you know, Juan Carlos staring into the abyss of his mid-20s has decided to move out to Los Angeles. You know, it was pretty hilarious, right? And I actually worked at the Herald with Ryan Murphy. Ryan Murphy was an arts writer, but he lived out here and he did a lot of cultural stuff and arts writing. We were both at the Herald at the same time. So I came out here, and the other person was the executive editor. This is a hilarious story. He called me in his office, you know, very brusque kind of city editor, you know, exactly what you expect, and sat me down. And he said, "So screenwriter, huh?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "My kid wants to do that." So it was just like, he had no argument, right? He was just like, "Oh," I was like, "Sorry?" I didn't know. I mean, at that point, it's like the meeting was over. It's like, I didn't know what to say to him, right? So
did his kid go on screenwriter?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly. I
want keep to add about something that I've seen a connection with all these stories I just heard in the last 15 minutes. Each of you took a big leap into the void. To do something different, to do something that was not comfortable, but was exciting to you. And I recommend that to everyone, to do something outside of your comfort zone, because it may lead to something wonderful. If you are too scared to make that leap, please don't be scared. Make the leap. Something will come of it. It may not be exactly what you thought it would be, but it will be something different and wonderful and something you could be proud of.
Yeah. I agree with that. And to tie on to that, for someone who did take a leap on certain things, the immense self-worth and pride that you get from accomplishing certain goals inside of those areas is amazing. And it's so much fun to watch, you know, your own self, your own growth from where you were here to where you are now here, and watching that develop. It's for me, watching myself grow over the last couple years. I mean, not physically, although that probably happened too, pandemic wise. No, but being able to see the growth in my own abilities and being able to feel comfortable doing things that I honestly 5 years ago, I never would have done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, never. It was advice that Manny gave as well. You know, find what you love and do it. I have actually, I just realized as you were talking about it, Armin, I have a 4-minute short memorial video that we did for Manny's memorial that I could share. I think if I do a, I have a, it's a, you know, it's a movie. It's a, what do you call it? A quick time, but I have a feeling that if I share a screen, I could, right?
Probably.
Yeah. You should be able to. Yeah.
I'd love to see it.
Let me see if I can call it up real quick. Cause I mean, I've called it up, but let me see what happens. So I hit present.
Present. And then you, yeah.
And then do I pick, oh, I can do video file. Okay. Let me see if I can.
Yep.
Oh, so give me 1 second because I got to navigate to it. Hold on. It's coming from, let me make sure it's on my hard drive though, because it's on my Dropbox and I want to make sure that it's loaded. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But whenever you get it ready, chatting. Fire it up.
Yeah. And okay. I think too, talking about the doing the things, jumping and doing, and you're not going to, you don't know if you're going to fly unless you jump. Like,
that's right.
You might fall, but you could fly.
And but even if you fall, you fall on something different. And that's exciting. And Jim's right. You do find out what you're capable of.
You learn more from failure.
And my husband actually uses the saying frequently that fail is just a first attempt in learning. Like, just because you fail doesn't mean that you stay there forever. You get up and you try the next thing.
You don't know.
But
let me see if you buzz later.
Yep, that's true.
But
right, let me see what happens here. Let me try this. Let's see.
Yay.
All right, go for it.
This video uses a unique codec that your browser doesn't support. Follow these steps to. Okay. Well, it's not going to work. Let me see.
Well,
share screen. Hold on.
That so we can see it at least.
He's going to try and get it.
Unless you can't.
Going to try and get it up.
Okay, great.
Yeah, but like the first time that we were asked to go to the Monroe Comic Con, and it was the, you want us to do what? We're gonna be running the panel room? What do you mean we're gonna be running the panel room? We don't know how to run a panel room. And it was such an absolute blast that I mean, it's a very small con, so we had maybe 10-15 people in the panel room with us. But that was 10-15 people that I didn't know before that day. I hadn't heard what got them into Star Wars, what got them into different aspects of pop culture. We had, Tim got to do an amazing panel with Darren McCarty, former Red Wings player as well, that there are so many cool opportunities that have been opened up to us because of this. And I mean, even with working with you guys with PanCan, this is insane. Like, I took a picture of the screen and posted it on my Instagram and my Facebook with the, my life is so bizarre. Like, I grew up watching Jonathan and Armin on my TV, and I'm talking to you guys. This is insane. This is nothing that I would have even dreamed was a possibility 3 years ago. This is.
And shouldn't people dream big? Shouldn't people think?
Oh, absolutely.
My God, I should reach for the stars. I'm always admiring the people who do that, and I admire the ones who get there, of course, but I also admire the people who tried and didn't succeed. Those are the braver ones because they didn't succeed. Yeah. And I have just as much admiration for those people as for the ones that did succeed.
Because they put the effort in. They tried.
I know a lot of actors who are wonderful, wonderful actors who never succeeded. And yet the talent succeed a lot of the people that I know that did succeed.
Yep.
And so many people are so thrilled with the 5 minute meet and greet that they get at Comic Cons with you.
I don't understand it at all, Catherine.
we get 5 minutes and a picture. This is the third time that we've had you on the show. This is the third time that we've gotten to talk about how big of an impact Quark made and how you get to help make such an impact now yourself as well. Like this is beyond any of those dreaming for the reaching for the stars that I thought I was going to do. This is way cooler. And then there's a cat who's doing whatever he's doing, getting into trouble.
That's what cats do.
She's got two new cats. I'm going to go see him this week.
How are you doing with the video?
Oh, I was going to try to, I said I might as well convert it. Let me see what happens.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Now, Tim, tell us about your collection behind you, which is fascinating.
Oh, so wait, one second. Oh, you go ahead. I think you're asking me about my.
I'm asking Tim while you're working on the video.
Yes.
Tim and his Funkos.
I forgot this one because. So, for those who watched our show for a while, they know, because I introduce them regularly, I'm a very big fan of Funko Pops. Some of this is from what I, from such a small collection. Yes. This is just a, this is, yeah, there's more at home. Anyway, we'll just leave it at that. But I'm a big collector of Funko Pops because one of the things I was told, and I, this made a whole lot of sense to me, is that, you know, sometimes as young people, you don't always get the toys and things that you want. And so when you're an adult and you have adult money, you have the opportunity to go spend your money on things that you would have wanted as a kid.
A Ferrari.
Well, I haven't found that much adult money yet, but I'm working on it. There's actually, I'd just get a really nice truck, I think, if I had that much adult money. But I started collecting Funko Pops because it was a really cool way for me. Nobody asked you, Justin. Anyway, that's my buddy, Justin. I've known him for 26 years. He picks on me every time we talk about a Funko Pop. Anyway, but I started collecting these because I thought it was a really kind of a cool way to show my fandom. And you know, I collect Star Wars stuff and all this different memorabilia. And then I was able to make one of me. And so I made one of me.
Wow, that's cool.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I have a Lebowski one, but I don't know where it is.
You have a Funko Pop?
A Lebowski, yeah. But I think it's in the other room. Yeah, because I've been cleaning out my office and moving stuff around, so it's kind of a mess. But I have a Lebowski somewhere. This is... I have a dude.
That statement is probably truer than...
So that's our other co-host, Ben, who had to do his silly day job and responsible adult nonsense.
Mm. He couldn't join us today, but
he's mocking me from the
office. Are you employed, sir? I'm sorry. I'm doing a big Lebowski.
You have it? Did you get it, JC?
It's converting now. It's uploading to convert. So we'll see. Okay. I'm watching the TV thermometer go up to 48%. You know, like when the bomb, when we're downloading the secret, whatever.
We've got 8 minutes and 32 seconds, but who's counting?
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Did you get Funko Pops for your kids, of your kids and grandchildren?
No, the grandchild, no, because that one just happened. But so for of my children, you can see I have a caricature of my daughter. Well, I don't know if you can see it, but it's up there. And then
it looks like C-3PO back over here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And then right next to Chris Osgood and the Dayton Ward cover art for the Kung Fu, the Kirk Fu book, rather, is a picture of my two boys when we went to Disney years back as Obi-Wan and Anakin. And although I think now looking at the who they became in real life, we probably should flip those around a little bit. Love you guys. Love you. Dad loves you. And then above me here, I have paintings from my wife and my daughter on the wall.
Great. So excellent.
I always have things of my family around me, not to mention a really cool, like, you know, you go to the amusement parks, you get those strips of pictures, there's like four or five pictures in a row. My wife and I did one of those at a sock hop dance a few years back. So I have those pictures on the wall here next to me. So,
and Kathleen, do you have stuff as well?
I do. I have a ridiculous number of things. I have a few Funkos. I don't have anywhere near as many as Tim. I have two I have two from Critical Role. I have one DC. I have three Star Wars, and I have three from Hamilton. Because why not? I have a stuffed Yoshi because he's adorable. And yeah, I've got, honestly, the thing that I collect more than anything else, and this gets me mocked relentlessly usually, is I have a mild obsession with dice.
What?
Oh, wow. Dice. It's dice. So this is my dice bag for our RPG, and it currently has 38 sets of dice in it, plus other random assorted ones. So Tim,
I have like three. She has,
yeah, he has three, and one of them I bought for him.
Also true. Ben bought me the other set. I've only bought one for myself so far.
And the one set that you bought for yourself, who did you get them from?
Oh, yeah, I got those from Todd Stashwick's Nerd Circus because they looked like little candies, and I was like, those are awesome. I kind of want to eat them and play with them. So,
so Tim showed off his Funko of himself. These, I was at the Nordic Fire Festival in Charlotte, Michigan, and I saw this set of dice, and it was I absolutely must have those. They are metal, and they look like
those are cool.
Tiny mines. They are sharp and pointy, but they're this absolutely gorgeous blue and silver.
Yeah.
But they are also deadly sharp.
And what would you roll them for? What are they to be used for? That's for sure.
Like D&D games, tabletop role-playing games.
We have our tabletop role-playing game once a month on the show that we do a Star Wars RPG. That was Tim had never played a role-playing type game before, so we got him into that. And that's been going on.
I've never played one either. I have no idea how you go about that.
It is very much theater of the mind with math.
Let me try this, you guys, and see what happens. So just so you know, you're going to see pieces of a student films and home movies and all kinds of things. But this is what we played at his memorial at Howard Gordon's house.
There is also a Star Trek RPG. We need to remedy the fact that we haven't played that yet.
Go ahead, Juan. Juan Carlos, whenever you get that ready.
It's coming through now, Tom.
All right.
Is it coming?
Not quite. Not
yet. I said video file, so let's see.
I do also on my dice bag have my Kirk and Spock cat pins.
We see that. Yeah. Cool.
I saw those on a vacation and I'm like, they're adorable. And Spock is a Siamese cat, which I think is hilarious. I don't know why it made me laugh as much as it did.
You know, you were talking about, Kathleen, about talking to Jonathan and I, and that was a surprise. I'll stop talking as soon as JC gets the video.
File, but it wouldn't come through. I don't know why.
One of the things that blows my mind is I was a huge Star Trek fan when I was a young man in my teens. And the fact that I became friends with Leonard Nimoy was beyond imagination. We worked on several projects, non-Star Trek projects together. And I remember Kitty and I went to a restaurant. And as we came in, I heard someone calling my name in the restaurant. And I looked around. It was a dark restaurant. I couldn't see who it was. And I think you saw it. She said, it's Leonard Nimoy over there. And I said, well, go to the table. I'll catch up with you. And I went over and talked to Leonard and Susan for about 5 minutes. And when I got back to the table, to Kitty's table, I said, I can't believe that Mr. Spock just called me over to his table after years of working with Leonard. But it is a surprise to find yourself in that situation.
It is. You know, and as we're still hopefully waiting for technology to cooperate,
it's ready.
Can you play it? Because I can't hit play here. So you can play it?
Yeah, so what it is, you uploaded it, you readied it, and for whatever reason, because I'm the host. I'm the one who has to add it to the screen, apparently.
Okay.
Cool. I'm just sitting here like, yeah, he'll add it whenever he gets a chance. It's fine.
No, it's 4 minutes, it's
Yeah, I'm the booger in the ointment here. Here we go.
All
right. This is from his student films.
This is brilliant.
It's great. Yeah.
What dad or mentor incredible advice bulk. Would you like to give our audience? Dad or mentor advice? You know, can we take a break? Can we think about one? You know, I would say this, and I say this to my son, and I say this to, I think the most important thing in life is to figure out early on what it is you love and figure out a way to make it happen.
In Hollywood movies, Americans always win. Too bad for you, you're not in the movie.
My heart always belongs to the pilot. It started so propulsively. We met the characters.
hallmark of a psychopath is...
They have no empathy.
They have no empathy.
It's a cinematic experience.
Now, who the hell are you?
I'm the last remaining inhabitant of my world. We identified ourselves by our life purpose.
I think it's time for a test drive.
I think science fiction needs to have an element that you that hits you in the gut and makes you identify.
The final frontier begins this hall. Let's explore it together.
You're creating a whole extra science, you know, fantasy fiction level. And so that has to be worked out and worked out in as much detail as possible.
Long live the Empire!
Long live the Empire!
Try some of your own medicine.
Larry Drake!
Manny was one of the funniest people I've ever met.
You, Bessie boy!
He really did have a very wicked sense of humor.
Manny also did a show called Next about AI, which, considering the world we're in right now, that maybe he was a little ahead of his time there with that show.
I'll tell you, though, the 24 does have its own share of tech writing. I mean, imaginative.
Well, that's Manny and Brandon, yeah.
Star Trek,
yeah.
The nacelles are in the middle of an ion cascade, yeah, or whatever. Stuff you make up.
Right. But
frankly, a lot of the 24 stuff is very similar. A lot of the technology that's 24, a lot of this we just make up. And maybe do a little research afterwards to see if we can make it fit.
Positive ID on the target, 30 feet from the south wall.
Here we go.
Bauer is a traitor and a psychopath.
Working with Manny, it was fun. It was always fun. Fun to write, fun to watch. And that translated onto the screen.
We don't always know exactly where we're going.
Stop screwing with me!
But it feels like it was naturally put together.
I mean, he had an amazing career. He died loving what he did. It's true.
Thank you.
There's nothing worse than not knowing what it is you enjoy doing and what it is you want to do.
Hey, it's me.
There's plenty of people in this world who go about aimlessly and drift from place to place and never really find their calling. I think if there's one thing that school and life is for, is to figure out exactly what it is. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it like my father was always like, find something where you're the boss. My feeling is it's like, find something where you can't live without it. Whether you're the boss, whether you make a lot of money, whether you make no money, whether you make a little money, find what it is and make sure that's what you do.
Excellent advice. Excellent.
Yeah. Right? Thanks, guys.
Oh, that's lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That was very cool. Thank you for sharing that.
That was cool. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think you have to get rid of it, though, right? Yeah.
And now I want to watch Dexter again.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he had a great time. I think he was on there 2 seasons, maybe 3. Can't remember exactly, but he had a great time on that show as well.
Great time every place he went.
Yeah.
Well, again.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This feels like the perfect way to wrap up.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah. And that was beautiful. Remind everybody, if you would please, where people can go to continue to donate and continue to support the efforts of Purple Stride.
Go to purplestride.org, put in Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer, and you will find us. You can find the FSF podcast section of that, or start your own version of the FSF sub team. That'd be great too. Whatever you want to do, we would love to see you. We would love to hear from you. And please retweet, repost, re-Facebook, re-Instagram, re-whatever you do. It would be really helpful.
And most important to me anyway is if you hear of anybody who's diagnosed with this, tell them to go to PanCan.
Yeah.
Wonderful advice.
Yeah.
Juan Carlos, thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Juan Carlos.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you.
I have to tell you one last thing, Armin. Your autographed picture of Cork that you sent to my mother is still in front of our family picture. It is the first picture you see when you walk in.
something wrong with that.
It is the first picture you see when you walk in my mom's front door.
Okay.
I love it.
So that's the way to chase people away from the door.
It is such a conversation starter. It is such a topic of conversation. It's amazing.
Where did you get that? Well, it's like this.
My dentist had those, and I described it. Thanks for the teeth, Doc. I think you lost a lot of customers.
Oh, man. And yes, Jason, my mom does have good taste. She really does.
All right, and thank you to Jonathan Frakes and John Billingsley. We appreciate them being here for the time they were able to cut some time out for us. And so, everyone, thank you for being a part of this. To those who have donated, thank you so much. That means the world to all of us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for doing good for good for good people and giving them, because that is the Star Trek way. That is, we want to see hope. Star Trek is the hope for humankind of what we could be, and you have just allowed people to have hope for what they could be. Through your donation. So that is awesome.
Thank you, everyone.
And good night.
Goodbye. Good night.
Thank you.
There it is. Live long and proud. I'll get it right.
Sweet.
Copyright 2024 FSF Podcast. Reference to any specific product or entity mentioned on this podcast does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by FSF Podcast. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact us via email at info@fsfpopcast.com.